George Fong. Good morning.
How are you?
I'm very well. You well?
Yes. Very well, very busy.
You had to stop and think.
He stumbles all over the place at the moment. Yeah, the internet's a very busy place at the moment.
Apparently so. We started our program talking about the internet this morning, talking about the website, particularly ugly website, Who's a Dog, which has been getting a bit of attention from people in and around Colac. Now, you weren't aware of this. You've just had a quick look while that song was playing because I wanted you to see it. What do you make of it?
I don't like it. I think that sort of airing of dirty laundry in front of people publicly, especially on the internet, can cause all sorts of damage and embarrassment. And I think that there may well be situations where, and I think you have spoken to a lawyer about it, where the laws of defamation will kick in big time. I don't think people realise the magnitude of things that they can put up and say and how hurtful they can be and what consequences can roll as a result of that.
Yeah. If listeners missed the first story on the program this morning, this particular site is listed as a name and shame site. So if someone's wronged you, you can go on there and write what you want about them. Unfortunately, though, there's a whole lot of defamatory claims made about local people, some of a personal nature, some of a sexual nature. There are some extreme racist views about the local Sudanese community that are posted up there, which I'm sure would have to come under Human Rights and Equal Opportunities Act. It also includes threats of violence against people for things they have allegedly done. Should it be banned? George, I've said this before, I don't like banning things for the sake of banning things, but
this is really something that becomes very difficult from the point of... There's a couple of things. Firstly, I think that by any standards, I mean, if you were an ISP in Australia and you were hosting that, you'd probably take it down arbitrarily anyway, because the potential for damage and hurt is high. And you mentioned, you know, racist comments. Well, there is there are laws about racial vilification as well, and if it can be traced back, then there's going to be a problem. It's almost a situation where, you know, you almost take up the gun lobby type attitude and say, well, look, guns don't kill people, people kill people. The internet is very much about freedom of expression, and, you know, we're very defensive of that, but these sorts of things can cause that, if you like, desire and that sort of theory to be shaken quite profoundly in places. And I think the answer is no, I wouldn't like to see it taken down based on censorship, but I would like to see some people, perhaps the hosters themselves, the hosters themselves say, well, this could, expose us to potential problems. So we think out of, you know, in order to maintain the freedom that we have on the internet, this is not a good thing to stay up. And that is, if you like, a form of censorship, but it's also a pragmatic approach to things and to say, you know, I don't like what's being hosted. We've done that before in the past.
Because, my understanding is the people, if you can track back the people who've posted the comments and their defamatory comments, then they can be pursued, as can the person who hosts the site or allows them to put it up. In some cases, they can be pursued.
Well, in some cases, I mean, I think the lawyer you talked to may have pointed out the fact that just because you're the messenger, you don't necessarily get shot for it. And certainly ISPs have been in positions where they've said, look, all we did was host it. We didn't have any comment about it, and we really were just hosting it. And very generally, they're not the targets. Just to get a bit technical, it is possible to trace back as far as the ADSL modem for many of these sorts of things. Even with email, even if you're using a foreign email system, with the exceptions of things like Hotmail and Google, if you are at home and if you do send out a flame mail or something like that, or if you do connect to sites like this, so there is a good chance that you can be traced. And if it is a criminal offence, people need to be aware of the fact that the police, especially the federal police, actually have rights to go into ISPs and say, where's your interception plan and where's the information that you've got in the system? By law, most ISPs who fall under the umbrella of the federal legislation on telecommunications are required to put up, as part of a process of allowing the police in, an interception plan so they can actually monitor stuff on the net. You know, so that's sidestepping the moral issues and the legal issues. My view is that it's probably not illegal to have the site up. What goes on the site is likely to create a situation where some laws may be broken, especially with regard to racial vilification and especially with regard to the potential of defamation.
Yeah.
And, you know, defamation's about telling untruths about people. Exaggerations in the truth can sometimes hurt, but if they are the truth, sometimes you can skate around it. But it's likely that the magnitude and of the comments made are likely to drift into defamation.
Yeah, well, our guest this morning, Matt Collins, the Melbourne barrister, described it as a hate site, and I think that's That's a pretty apt description. Let's move on to happier things. Sally in Ballarat has called in. George. Sally, good morning.
Hi, Sally.
Good
how are
morning,
you?
Good morning, Stephen, George. I've just got a question. We're actually about to move just outside of Ballarat, and the two major suppliers have both said there's no ADSL out there. It's out at Haddon. So we've gone with a wireless option with the wireless modem.
Yep.
But, of course, there's patchy reception for phones out there as well.
Yep.
So we're finding that we are struggling to get reception with our wireless modem. Now, someone has mentioned to me that we could perhaps attach an antenna to our roof, which could increase our reception. Is that? Do you know if that's a possibility, or is there any other options we can go with?
Well, there are a couple of things I'd be concerned about. How far, Sally, out of Haddon are you?
We're halfway, if you sort of know the area, I guess
we're
halfway between Haddon and
Smythedale. Okay, well, I know the area well because my son races at the go-kart track there.
Uh-huh.
There is ADSL access in and around the area. I'd be very keen to find out whereabouts you are because both providers have told you there's no ADSL access there? Okay, what sort of wireless are you getting? Without mentioning providers,
We've just got one of the little USB sticks.
Okay, so basically it's a 3G type connection.
Yeah.
That's expensive. What I'd be concerned about is the cost that you'd be running up using it unless there's a subsidy to follow it.
Yeah.
And what I would do is make some inquiries about whether or not you're entitled to a broadband subsidy, in which case you could possibly get... we've talked about satellite connections before. You could possibly get a satellite connection with reasonable amounts of bandwidth at a price that you would normally be charged ADSL for.
Okay. Has
that been explored?
No.
Okay, well, it might be worth looking at. One of the first sites I would go to is a site called Whirlpool, and it's www.whirlpool.net.au, not .com.au,
yep.
Unless you want to know about washing machines. And Whirlpool has a huge independent forum about broadband issues in Australia, but it also has a lot of information about where the ADSL stuff is and what sort of deals are available. And if you actually type in your phone number, it will actually give you information about internet service providers in your area.
Excellent.
So that would be worth following up. But the other thing is to go to www.dbcde.gov.au.
Sorry, that was again.
DBCDE.
Mm-hmm.
The Department of Broadband Communications and the Digital Economy. There, I said it without stumbling.
Oh, goodness, yeah.
DBCDE.gov.au and look up the issues on broadband subsidies.
Okay.
There will be information there. The idea is to keep it down. I am a big fan, as many people know, about 3G services. On that wireless modem that you've got, Sally, you can get between 4 to 5 times the speeds that your friends get on ADSL.
Mm-hmm.
But it does come with a price tag on it, so you do need to be careful about that.
Yep.
And
okay.
If you've got kids running around doing downloads or anything, I think you might want to do some alternative searching.
And Sally, as far as the aerial is concerned, if there's a way to plug an aerial in to the modem that you've got or the little USB stick, and I'm not sure it necessarily would have a capacity for an aerial, but if it does, it would work the same as a car kit does in a car where you put the external aerial and you increase the reception. So it would work.
Sally, I missed you. I've sidestepped your question altogether. Yes,
no, that's okay.
There are wireless, there are aerial that will boost a signal. Yes, there are.
Yeah.
But I would go in there and I would say, look, give me one for the day and let me try it.
Yeah, well, that's what we've done. I've got it on 30 days, sort of money back to try and see how it goes.
Wise choice, Sally. Sorry, Steve, I cut you off.
That's okay. So the USB stick is on a trial basis?
Yeah, it's 30-day trial, and if it's not acceptable in the area, then you can take it back.
Well, look, if it's the company I'm thinking that it is, then they will very genuinely look for an alternative that you need. But do be prepared to do some research at Whirlpool. There are I would take a bet that you've got 10 to 15 providers that could probably provide you with something in your area.
Excellent. Thank you. Well,
thanks, Sally.
That's great. Bye.
Sally in Ballarat. And that web address, if you want to know about the broadband stuff, is whirlpool.net.au or just .net?
www.whirlpool.net.au.
Not .com because that's the white goods manufacturer's website, so .net is the site. Now, George, I didn't ask you either. Homework from last week or the week before?
I did have one piece of homework which I've actually partially got up. Phil from Portland, I'm really sorry, mate. I did get caught up. I actually wrote some stuff and I'm going to say that the dog ate my homework. I had three goes at putting this thing up, and it collapsed on me three times because I was sort of so busy I forgot to save the work. So you'll find half an article up there at the moment, and I'll put the rest of the links up when I get back.
On george.fong.id.au.
Correct. Sorry about that, Phil. I owe you some homework on that.
All right. Tell me about the Bermuda Triangle.
The Bermuda Triangle was a very interesting program on TV the other day about planes disappearing off the planet.
Yes. And
if you remember, there was a very famous...
Well, I don't know if they disappeared off the planet, but anyway.
Well, there were 14 of them that did after the war.
They disappeared. Yeah. I don't know if they went off the planet. That's the only point of contention, but go on.
Well, we sort of partially touched on this last week with Liz, but a lot of people are coming to me and saying, all my emails disappeared. I mean, I send stuff out there and nothing comes back. Websites are disappearing. What's going on? You know, is the internet broken? Well, we didn't actually say last week that the internet is broken, and I'll stick with that, and there were a whole bunch of reasons for that. But most importantly, there does seem to be a Bermuda Triangle of email at the moment, and it's increasing with the increase of spam and things like that getting lost in the process. Part of the reason that people will lose spam, as we found very recently, is that they may themselves have been targeted by the anti-spam organisations as potential spammers. And this is a significant point because there's been a prosecution, a person in Queensland has been caught as a spammer. Mm. And Spam House, which is the biggest non-profit organisation in the world that deals with spam, indicated in an article in the newspapers yesterday and the day before, that this guy is possibly responsible with his organisation for about half of the spam in the world, which is a very interesting statistic.
Can you give us numbers of emails that would entail?
Billions. Quite literally billions and billions of mails. An example we gave last week was the fact that a person that we knew who had a PC in a compromised state, the result of that compromise ended up in that PC sending out 37,000 emails in half an hour. Now, fortunately, we had traps to set up to catch all of that because of the anti-spam works both ways. It doesn't just check incoming mail, it also checks outgoing.
Right, okay.
But as a result of that, they didn't know that they'd sent 37,000 emails out. Why? Because our spam system doesn't actually go back to the spammer and say, nah, we caught you, because that's actually kind of acknowledging the fact that you're a legitimate mail server and you actually got the mail. Mm. So very often we drop spam and we just make it disappear. We put it into a quarantine, but we don't tell anybody or acknowledge the mail. Some people, if they are losing their mail, need to check to see whether or not they are actually listed in the spam bases, because we found an increasing number of home ADSL modems being listed or blacklisted by a whole bunch of different spam lists that we use, which actually will prevent the mail from going out and they won't tell you.
Uh-huh.
So you need to
check. If you're sending emails and people aren't getting them and they're going missing, then you need to check.
There is a possibility that through no fault of your own, you may have been listed on a blacklist. And,
right.
And that's not beyond the realms of comprehension anymore, because we have seen a number of home users recently within our bailiwick being caught by that sort of thing.
A couple of calls have come in. We'll get to those in a sec. Nick has sent in an SMS that says, Steve, I'm in the same Haddon area and get great ADSJ, which I'm sure is ADSL. But that's come through from Nick, as Sally, who was calling before, saying that he gets good ADSL. So it can just be the distance that you're going to be from the exchange.
It is, and it may not be feasible to get ADSL where Sally is. Mm. So Whirlpool will give you an idea of where... putting in your actual phone number will give you a result as to whether or not the exchange is capable, because she might be on a different exchange. But I was pretty sure when she said Haddon that Haddon actually does get quite good ADSL access now.
Well, I have to wait, I guess, and see if we hear back from Sally.
Yeah,
David's called in from Wenderee. David, good morning.
Hi, David. How are you?
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Very well. You're building a website.
I am working with an organisation that is building a website through the ballarat.vic.au. community portal.
Fantastic. So you're working with Wayne, are you?
I am working with Wayne, yes.
You're having some problems, though.
I'm having some problems with the site when I work on it from home.
Okay.
I have a cable internet service.
Mm-hmm.
I've done some tests on the upload and download speed.
Yep.
And I'll just take a step backwards. I do actually have a number of computers networked through a router.
Mm-hmm.
Which I have noticed a couple of times has given me a couple of little issues. The speed has ranged from a download of just on 2,000 kbps and an upload of just under 1,000
yep.
for the test I did 2 minutes ago, which is 23,000 up and 5,000 down.
Yep.
Sorry, the other way around.
Yep.
So, you know, there's certainly no problem with the speed.
Yep.
But I'm getting into the pages I want to work on without any trouble. When I hit the save button, it sort of sits there and thinks for about 45 to 60 seconds and then times out.
Oh, that's not good.
Working with Joomla, if it times out, your work's supposed to be saved.
Yeah.
In this particular instance, I'm losing whatever I've changed.
Okay, there are a number of things that we need to be looking at. The first thing that we may need to be looking at is how your firewall's working and interacting with the various sites. And look, Dave, I've got an interest in this because we actually, as an organisation, you know, provide some support for the servers and everything like that. One of the things I would be wanting to do is getting offline with you and then watching what happens at the server end, if you like, to see what's breaking in between. It could be that it's timing out because of the way that if you're on the same provider, then it's a possibility that there's a routing issue somewhere with cable modems, and we've seen this before. But more importantly, what we want to know is whether or not you've got a clear channel straight to the server. So there may be and this happens with many sites, and it doesn't matter which provider you're on. It could be that the way that the thing is routing back is not optimal, and so it's actually dropping packets before, or some packets before it gets back to you. So because there's no acknowledgement, it basically says, well, I've got some packets, but I'm not going to actually acknowledge till I get all of them, and then it just drops.
Yeah.
So what we need to do is some trace routes between the two systems and see if we can find a bottleneck somewhere.
Right.
Which I'd like to do if we could. We'll take it offline, but we'll do some trace routes and see if we can follow it up, because obviously if you can't work from home, that's a bit of a pain. Do you have any problems working at BLX?
No.
Okay.
All right.
In that case, we've got a routing issue that we need to be looking at.
Although I was down there last night and everybody was complaining how slow the connection was. But no, I didn't have any issues with it falling over the way it does when I'm at home.
All right, we'll do some tests when we get back and see if we can find anything for you.
David, stay there for me, and Liz will pick up the line and get your phone number so you and George can talk about this later on and discuss. Alison in Ballarat, good morning.
Yeah, good morning.
Question about internet security.
Yeah, I'm not very computer literate. We're looking at getting the internet on. We've got three young children. Just don't know. I've heard about antivirus software and filters and anti-spyware. I don't know what it is and what we should be looking at getting.
Well, depends.
George, plain English.
Okay.
For Alison, plain English.
For those of you can't see, Steve's waving his finger at me as well. How old are your children?
Range from almost 10 down to 6.
Okay. Well, I mean, the first thing you would do is buy a PC and plonk it somewhere in the lounge room where everybody, and with the screen faced, so if you're in the kitchen or somewhere, you can actually see what's going on.
Yep.
The second thing is that in terms of buying a computer, very often you will get a computer that is bundled with a bunch of different of software that you can get with antivirus, firewalls, anti-spyware and things like that. If you are buying a bundle package like that, then read very carefully the terms by which those packages are given. Sometimes they only last 60 days or things like that. What you want is a permanent solution. Now, if you actually get a custom-built computer, or if you go to a small local shop where they build the computers for you, they'll give you their choice of software to build, and they will also explain how to use it and things like that.
Yeah.
I would be shopping around. I'd be going to the big stores where they move boxes and seeing what deals there are. I'd also be going to the local stores, and obviously, you know, we've got a preference for some of our local people around here, if only for the fact that we get custom builds as to what we need. But that doesn't rule out the fact that you can get good deals from the other places. Make sure that you've questioned what software bundles you've got and what sort of control you've got over the PC. And don't take no for an answer. It's your money, and it's going to be your computer. You need to have a level of comfort. There are so many different bits and pieces that you can buy that come with the computer. The answer that you need from these people is, how easy is it, and show me. And if you have some level of comfort that they are doing that, then that's probably the deal for you. And, you know, set a budget, but at the same time, the software that you're looking for is obviously a good antivirus software that has at least a year's license.
Mm-hmm.
If you are looking for internet filtering software, that's probably it's probably a good idea to ask the ISP about that, because most ISPs provide internet filtering software as well.
Okay.
And you're obviously looking for things like a good firewall. When you have an ADSL modem, it has a firewall on it. You'll need somebody to explain to you how that firewall works. And if they can't explain it to you, that's usually the ISP end, then you need to get somebody to do it.
Yep.
All right, bit scary. Do the research. Obviously, the most important thing is set a budget and make sure you question.
Yep.
Thanks,
Alison.
Okay,
so the only place you can really do the research is in the shops and things like that.
There's no reason why you can't stand in front of the computer and say to the salesperson, show me.
Alison, we have to leave it there because we're coming up to local news. But, of course, George will be back next week if you have more questions. George, thank you.